Hey, to whoever may need this nugget of encouragement, things will be alright, so quit your worry. I get it, the odds can stack back against the wall, but even consider it such, know you'll stand tall. Sat and watch from the sidelines one too many times. Wicked games to play make me want to lose my mind. Found solitude knowing it'll be over soon.
Hi everyone, welcome to Contrary to the Culture. I am your host, Jaysa King. This podcast has been created solely to explore the depths of cultures around the nation. We will have interviews from experts, challenge the mainstream ideas surrounding the cultural identities in our society, as well as make sure we touch on misconceptions we have about. All episodes are brought to you on Tuesdays at 3 p.m. on all major podcast platforms, not to mention my website, audacityofwomen.com. There, under the podcast tab, you can find transcripts from every episode. In order to know how we're doing, I need you to show us some love. Hit that subscribe button, like this video, comment your experiences, but most importantly, turn on your notifications so you don't miss any of the episodes. Now that that's done, let's jump into our episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Contrary to the Culture. As I told you in the past post that I've been making, the video before this, I will be expanding our platform into guests. I want to make sure that I am bringing on experts that have different perspectives outside of mine, because you know we can be biased, that can really open our minds into the different world, right? We have so many perspectives, we have so many cultures, so many experiences that we have no idea what we are even walking into half the time. So our first one up is Angelina Mojica. I'm super excited. She is a director for foster care as well as the founder of the nonprofit Empower Her Steps, right? And I am super excited to talk about it. We got to talk a little bit about her background, where she's going, and just the amazing things that she's been able to experience on her journey. So before we get into that, I want to make sure we understand this topic is going to be, it takes a village to raise a legacy, okay? So this is going to really dive into our kids. This is going to dive into how they go from point A to point B, the things that we don't want to talk about as far as maybe being in foster care, right? Those are topics that aren't really in our face all the time, as well as, of course, the intricacies of our cultures, right? Every culture is different in how we handle things, on how we move through this world. So I want to make sure we dive into those topics as well. So without further ado, Angelina, thank you so much for coming on. Welcome.
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to speak about things that I'm passionate about.
Oh my gosh, I can only imagine the different experiences you've had. Like I said, we already talked about just one story of yours, and that aha moment, like you described, it is amazing to jump into it and realize, okay, this is my point, you know, this is my turning point. And you had mentioned that you started late. Tell me what you were doing before that, right? So you start in your 30s when you know, okay, this is where I'm going. What were you doing before that?
Oh girl, trying to figure out a life. So a lot of what I do today is, it does stem from my own personal story. Mm-hmm. And so what that story entails is my own childhood trauma. Mm-hmm. So recovering from my own childhood trauma, getting out of toxic and domestically violent relationships, mm-hmm. doing so as a single mother, and navigating kind of a headspace and a mental space and emotional space of numbness. So going through the motions of life and just surviving, just being a survivor, and trying to figure out where the patterns are, where the cycles are, and what I need to do to break them. Mm. And so as I'm doing this, and I started my motherhood at the age of 19. And so that's when I started my first relationship, and I got married really young, and that didn't work out. And we went through a divorce. And during the same time of my divorce, my dad was diagnosed with leukemia. And I was in my 24, I was like in my 20s at that time. So it's about 24 years old. And going through all of that, my dad passes away, and I'm struggling through the grief of a divorce, the grief of my father passing, and raising a small child who was 4 years old at the time, and just trying to figure it out. that death of my father just kind of spun some things in my mother during that time. And so she started to revert back to her own addictions and things like that. And in that, I had two younger sisters that were just kind of thrown off to the side. And so trying to help with that as well, getting them through school. But in the midst of all of that, I was in this violent relationship that caused a miscarriage for myself. And then I birthed two other children through that relationship. And then being a statistic, I mean, I'm very open and honest with the situation. I fell into those statistical norms, and it took me 7 tries to get out of that relationship. But when I finally was able to break free, and amazingly, it wasn't me that made that decision. He did. And it was through infidelity. So getting kicked out of our family home with my 3 babies made me make a decision. And I was able to really break free from that cycle of abuse and continue on my journey. And then that's when, I'm a spiritual person and I believe in God. So I fell to my knees and I cried that ugly cry where your makeup's running all over your face. You got snot in your nose and you're just gasping for air. And I'm asking, you know, God, why is this happening? Why do bad things happen to good people? What's going on? And how can I change? Because I can't do this myself. And really that breaking point in my life and just surrendering it and all to God and going, I can't do this by myself. I need help. And then later, just kind of listening to what the answers were as they came. So I went to church that following Sunday, and the answer was, I don't want this for you. My intentions are to give you hope in a future, but you make choices in your life that you have to be responsible for, because choices come with consequences, whether you deem them good or bad. There's still consequences. But what I want you to take from that is a lesson learned. What did it teach you about yourself?
Mm-hmm.
What can you do now knowing what that feels like?
Mm-hmm.
And what I would like you to do is get up onto your feet,
mm-hmm.
shine your light, and utilize your story to help others in their darkness. And so that's when I'm 28 at this time, you know, entering my 30s, online school was starting to hit. Giving my age there, but online school hit, and that provided me an opportunity to go back to school and finish my bachelor's degree. So I have a bachelor's in psychology, and I continued to move on with that, a master's in human services. Mm-hmm. And so I just continued this education. And then that's when I jumped into the field of child welfare, because I was once that child. I was once that kid that suffered through those things, and I had no interventions, and I probably should have. Mm-hmm. And so now I want to be someone that brings that education and awareness to the community.
Oh, I am just, first off, very inspired. Thank you so much for sharing that. I know a lot of details about our lives. It takes a lot to be vulnerable about them. And that's a lot of the things that you mentioned. I am right there with you. I'm only 26. So a lot of the things that you mentioned, I've experienced as well. And it's interesting how they really mold us. Like you mentioned, you don't realize the things that you're going through in that moment. You're just trying to figure out why you're even in that position, but you understand later. And that is very important. So when you are, when I kind of go through our questions, so when you're in a position with children that are in the same position you were in, trying to figure out why, trying to figure out how they got to that point, how do you address that? You know, you're there to be that person for them. What do you say?
Honestly, you tell them the truth. I mean, this really does stink. Like I can't relate in the sense that I don't know what it's like to be pulled away from my parents.
Mm-hmm.
But I do understand, just because I have had the education and the training, that when we grow up in chaos, we don't know any different as children. That's our norm. That's our normal. And it's not until we start going into our adolescent years where we start seeing different things and we're exposed to different cultures and your family dynamics and just more of an awareness of what's really going on in the world, do we start realizing that what's going on in home isn't necessarily healthy.
Yeah.
And so what does that say to our identity? So we have children that are confused about who they are and where they come from and they don't understand. So how do you address that? You tell them, you sit with them in that emotion, and you hold it with them, and you just validate that this really does stink. It really does. But what would you like to see for yourself? And so just tapping into what they're thinking, what they're feeling, and then you're able to really build that dialogue to implement some comfort or even some sense of safety and peace. It's not telling them it's going to be okay, because you really don't know. You don't know. And you just got to acknowledge that it is a situation that hurts my heart, because you have to go through it too.
Mm. Would you say that you see one demographic more than the other? When I worked in, I was a teacher for like 2 years, and where I started was actually with a pre-K. And I don't know what it was, but the first year I worked, I had one brother that was in foster care. And I had like three kids that were in foster care. But that following year, I had his brother. And when we were talking before, the idea of the challenging child, right? They were very challenging, and you can see them always going around to different foster homes because of this. But learning the things that they've been through, understanding just their poor mental health and just so much that they were undergoing. Again, this was pre-K. This was pre-K. And then the older one was in second grade at the time. They were taking on so much. But something that I've come to understand is mental health is dealt with differently from culture to culture. So would you say that you saw one type of demographic more than the other that may have been harder to deal with than others? That's a kind of loaded question.
That is. No, but I appreciate the question. There is disproportionality in our foster care system, for sure. And when we look at it, as far as the mental health, it's not discriminant. It doesn't discriminate. It very much is apparent in all of the children, whether that's PTSD or diagnosis, like behavioral diagnosis, emotional diagnosis, or true mental health illnesses that they are genetically just prone to based off of their genetics and their parents. Mm-hmm. That is very much, I see that no matter what culture they're coming from, it's very diverse, but it is not represented equally. And I think I want to say that it is changing, because the focus, at least here in Region 1, Texas, the West Texas area, they are trying to make family priority. And what I mean by that is more kinship placement. So keeping children within their family dynamics that are appropriate. Yeah. So we're seeing the statistics kind of change up a bit, because you do have children that are staying connected to families that want to help, want to keep the children out of foster care. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to know what it's going to look like in the next couple of years, because they just implemented this new structure back in 2019. Okay. So it's fairly new, but it's going. And so I'm very curious to see what the statistics would look like in a few years once our program here, our community-based program, stabilizes and the structures are in place to actually see the progress that's made. But as far as mental health, no, I mean, I see it young. You talked about pre-K, and it's very true, because you get them in there and they have experienced so much in their little short lives that they're dysregulated and their behaviors are, you know, you look at a child and when I was growing up, because I'm a Gen X, when I was growing up, it was like, oh, that bad kid. But it really, there is no such thing. And this is what I've grown to learn, and I try to educate Kate on. There is no such thing as a bad child or a spoiled child. What it is bad behaviors. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, because it's like telling a worker they're a bad worker, but really it's their habits that aren't productive. It's not nothing tied to the person. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to tie those behaviors into a child's identity, because you're not building up their self-worth. Mm. You're actually hurting it more than you are building it up. Yes.
That is so true. And I remember just my first year, I'm like, oh my gosh, this class is bad, because that's all you hear. It's like, oh yeah, that's the bad class. And you get there, you're like, no, that one needs a hug. This one's hungry. That one doesn't know what he's doing. You know, it's horrible. But then after a while, at least speaking honestly as a teacher, after a while, it's just easier. You know, it's easier to not deal with your own understanding of what they're going through. And not wanting to take the time to get to know their day. You know, that I think that is the biggest part of kids. I have a soon to be 1 year old next month, and just learning about him, I'm like, oh my gosh, yesterday you were good, today you hate me. I don't know what's going on, but it's just that way. And I actually had someone else on for another segment I do, and we were discussing how for kids, it's the same thing. You know, they don't know how to communicate. And I know for me, if I'm hungry, I'm going to have an attitude. That's just me. That's how I emote that I'm hungry. And to put it in a child's place who doesn't know to just say, hey, as simple as I'm hungry, that is something that goes into mental health. It goes into the behavior. It goes into how they work in a classroom and want to be around people. And I think that, again, these are so many different things that compose our kids, that compose our understanding of what they need. So I definitely commend you for that, because again, that is important to identify that it's not something you can put a label on.
Very true.
I can go on and on. Don't worry about me. Well, would you say that when it comes to women empowerment, right? So we are seeing women jump into these fields. They are jumping into so many things that not only are out of our nature, but suit our nature as far as being nurturers. What would you say it means to you when you see someone that is representative of you?
I think it's encouraging, and it inspires and motivates, because you want to surround yourself with people that are like-minded. Yeah. Because you know that so much can be accomplished when you work in unison. Mm-hmm. Rather than opposing each other. Yeah. And so I feel inspired when I see someone that is similar in their vision or their missions, because I'm like, okay, I'm on the right path, you know, because it's hard too. And being a woman in leadership, it's hard, because you have to there's this sense or this kind of feeling of you have to prove yourself, you have to prove your worth, you have to prove that you're competent. Mm-hmm. You know, all of these things. And I mean, that's just a historical, you talk about culture, history, that's just history. That's what history has embedded in our DNA and in our mindsets, is that we have to show that we are two times better than a man when it comes to leadership. And it really, I mean, there should be equality. Like, we need to change that understanding in our society, because I think a man, depending on their upbringing, is going to be just as qualified as a woman, depending on her upbringing too. So, like, there should be no diversity in that situation. It should be very similar, but just based on history alone, I mean, I could go on for that on that all day long. But you know, it just kind of taught us what women places are, you know, where we should be. And so we're coming out of that, and to see a woman breaking free from that and really operating in their true authentic self with their mission and their focus and their vision in place, I'm gonna be like, girl, let's go, you know, let me hold that door open for you while you walk through. That's who I'm gonna be. Yeah,
I love that. And it's funny, because I just did a women's history panel, and something we talked about was women in friendships. So I want to kind of pick your brain on this.
Sure.
Do you think that when women get into a position of power, right? So in schools, majority of the staff is going to be women. Do you see that we have a hard time sticking with each other for a long period of time? Would you say that at some point we do start to challenge each other in a way that it's intimidating?
So yes, because I've experienced it myself, but also too, it can be changed,
right?
Is how I approach from that. But this is history repeating itself,
right?
And like I mentioned, through the generations, mm-hmm. that have, you know, that have gone before us, and the ancestors and all those things, it's embedded. It's actually a program that's embedded in it. This is how it's supposed to be. And it changes from culture to culture too. But yeah, I think sometimes when there's an insecurity, because again, we have this thing, like, I have to prove myself. I have to be the best. I have to do this. And an insecurity within our belief system, so about ourselves, because it always starts from us. So there's an insecurity there that's like, oh wait, she's after my job.
Yeah.
Or I'm like, but we've been taught to look at those things when it comes to other women. And I'll give you an example, is that woman looking at my man.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So so we've been taught to look at those things when it comes to other women, rather than saying, girl, you want to be in a position like this? Let me show you how to do it. Let me mentor you so that you can. Because as a parent and as a supervisor and a director, I want people to step into my role better than I was when I stepped into it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and that's what I tell my kids. That's what I tell the team that I lead. I tell them, I want you to be better. I want you to be more knowledge and have more understanding and more training and skill set than I ever did when I stepped in here, because it will be so much more easier. And then when you have somebody else that comes up behind you, I hope you extend that same gratitude and just opportunity as well.
Yes. And it's so funny, because that's the same mindset that we're trying to put in our kids. And it's, I think personally, it is difficult, especially for people in my generation, because we are, like you pointed out, that's the world we live in. It's a competition. Who can do it better? And how are you going to prove that you've done it better? Instead of, like you pointed out, I have the same skill that you had last week. You are doing better here. Let's work together. Let's figure out how you can motivate me and how I can motivate you. Let's be an accountability partner. Let's teach me how to do this so I can teach you how to do that. But again, it is so difficult for women to get out of the mindset that we have to compete all the time. And I would say that in that light, it's worrying, concerning. That's a better word. It's concerning, because I see it in a lot of our younger generations. Like, I have 5 siblings, the younger siblings, and my siblings are very close, but they are always in a position where they feel like they have to compete with me or argue with me or debate about anything that can be as simple as knowing something just because I'm a little bit older, instead of understanding that I'm not here to go against you. You know, in those minor situations, which is, again, history, it's things that siblings do, but it just shows more of the woman's side that we can't take advice. We are not good at opening ourselves up to someone that is maybe older or a little bit closer in age to let you know that I'm here to help you and provide advice and not make you feel small. But again, that's another rant I can go off in. Can you tell me a little bit about your nonprofit, Empower Her Steps?
Yes. So my nonprofit, like I said, a lot of what I do stems from where I've been. And I use my nonprofit, what it stands for is Empower, and HER is an acronym for healing, elevating, and rebuilding. And it's a step-by-step process. You've got to take steps. You'll take some steps back, but you'll also take steps forward. We're constantly trying to heal the journey that we come from. So healing our past in order to elevate in our present so we can rebuild our future. And so that's the concept. And so right now, I mean, I've been in this nonprofit for about 2 years now. And I host these conferences that are absolutely free to our community. And I don't charge anything. And I pull together some keynote speakers that talk about their story, because I think through storytelling, we can learn and be inspired. And you never know who has a similar story until you share it. Because I know when I started to open up myself and really share the story that I come from, I've had women come up to me and going, oh my gosh, you don't know how many years I felt like I was by myself, and you're sharing this, and I understand. And just that relief that they get from knowing that they're not alone in the world. And so I have several different women that participate in these conferences from different phases in their life. And so making a friend in those conferences, again, you're holding the door open for another woman to build their life and create their life. But in order to do that, you have to heal what has kept you bonded and kept you from pursuing those goals and those dreams, and rebuild your identity so that you know who you are, how, and your truth, and you can stand on it and you stand firm on it and say, yeah, this is where I've been and this is what I did. But you know what? It also taught me that I can do whatever the dream is.
Anyway, with that being said, which is so interesting, I want to kind of go back to the topic, right? What does It Takes a Village mean to you?
I mean, I think that in that title alone is kind of just self-explanatory. And I'll give you a situation. I'll give you an example, just a personal example. So my daughter, who is now 22 and a mother of two littles who are under the age of two. So they're not. Yeah. So she's having two babies that she has to manage. And in her experience, and as she's going through this journey, I'm sitting there and we're having this conversation. And she's like, you know, I just feel so bad when I ask for people to help me with childcare or help me, you know, just so I can go to the grocery store real quick and just come over and watch them and whatever. And I'm like, why would you feel bad about asking for help? And she's like, well, Mom, when you were doing it, you did it by yourself. And so I had to tell her, let's take a step back and evaluate the differences in our circumstances. When I was taking care of the three of you, I didn't have my dad, I didn't have my mom, because they had both passed away by that time. And the sisters that I have, because I have, it's a sibling group of four, I'm the oldest, they're all out living their lives and taking care of their babies and their careers and things like that. I didn't have anybody to ask, but you do. So use your resources, use your sources that of help so that you can do what you need to do and know that your kids are going to be taken care of. I don't mind being here for you. It does take.
Oh, and that is so true. And I can relate with your daughter just because we're closer in age. It is so difficult to hear the stories. It's so difficult to hear the things that your parents have overcome. And you're just sitting there like, I just want to go pee. You know, I just want to.
Yes.
You're like, no, don't ask anyone. Figure out how to hold the baby and do the things that you need to do, because you want to just seem as though you are capable of doing something that you may not be able to. And that is okay. But I think that it's important for us to promote this idea of using your village if you have it accessible, or even not the traditional sense of family or friends. Because something else I had to learn is when I'm working, I've met some amazing people that I would have never known outside of doing an interview or some segment. And now I can call her or call these different people and get advice and get someone to just gawk over these pictures I've had because my mom's tired of looking at them, you know, and just the small things really matter. But something, again, that I'm seeing in this new age is people want to mind your business. Mind your business. Don't worry about my kid, or take care of your life. When in reality, we all can benefit, again, from things that we have to share, the different perspectives and experiences. And that really needs to be promoted. You cannot raise this amazing legacy and do these amazing things for your kid on your own all the time. And again, that is okay. But going back to what you said as far as healing, that again is important. That too goes into our motivation to move forward, our ability to do things for our kids. And I think too, courage in saying that you can't do it, which leads them to you in a position of being a foster care director to know, okay, this person took the accountability and said, I just can't do it. And is allowing that child to have an opportunity to find someone that can.
Yep.
And that's just, it's absolutely important. I think it is very courageous because, again, like you've talked about in your experiences, you come across things that you have to go home with. It is heavy. It is difficult to remember those kids, remember those parents. I think you have to be quite heartless to not be horrified to see your kid go through certain things, which there are experiences, but it's heavy. And again, I can go on. But my last question before I let you go. How do you find the light in people when you go home? Again, it's heavy. So what do you do?
I I've built enough self-awareness and within myself to kind of know what my capacity is, my threshold is. So for me to still stay positive and motivated, again, it's all inner work.
Right.
I wake up in the morning and I'm doing my affirmations. I'm setting up my vision for the day. What is it that I want to see when I step out? Mm-hmm. Because if my focus is on all the things that go wrong in the world and you know, my immediate circumstances and circles, then that's what's going to pull to my spirit. But if I step out knowing that I'm going to do the best that I can today, and I'm going to give it all today, everything that I have, and I'm going to step out with a positive mindset and energy, then I'm going to see the good in the day. And I can also see the good in the in people. And I can understand where they're coming from. If they're struggling themselves with anxiety and stress, I can sit there and say, friend, you need to take a day, go take a mental health day, go and breathe, go ground yourself, go get into nature a little bit, let some of that air hit your face and just breathe it in so that you can come back and center yourself, because you are not okay right now. And and that's fine, but take care of you first before you start taking care of our little people in our homes, because you're not going to do good for anybody if you're not doing good for yourself.
And we definitely appreciate those last words, because that is very important, not rubbing off onto our little ones. And just thinking about my little one now and give him a hug. Yeah. It is hard. And as always, I just want to express my just deepest inspiration for one and gratitude for even taking time to talk about this topic with us. Sure. This is our first episode, our first official episode for this topic. And I just have so many high hopes for it. I think it's going to be absolutely amazing to really dive into the other side of the world that, again, we don't talk about, we don't focus on or allow ourselves to put ourselves in those shoes. So I appreciate you for sure. 100% appreciate you.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure.
Yes. I thank you so much, Angelina. Again, I have all of your information. It is on my website. So if you guys want to read more about her and the amazing things she's doing, all of the links to her social media pages to get in touch with the nonprofit is on there as well. So I want to make sure that you guys go ahead and check that out on audacityofwomen.com. Read about her, get in touch with her, see what you can do to help out in Texas. And I look forward to you guys coming back next Tuesday for our next guest. I am Jaysa, and this is Contraries of the Culture. Bye.
All right, that was our episode. Thanks so much for listening to Contrary to the Culture. Again, I am your host, Jaysa King. You can find full show notes from today's episode at audacityofwomen.com under the podcast tab. Let's connect on Instagram at Just Jaysa Podcast. There you will find clips from our various segments and more information about yours truly. If you're loving the podcast, I'd be so honored if you go ahead and hit that subscribe button and leave me a review. Until next time. Ever need a boost, count on me for the 1-2. Trouble don't last when the tough get going. Baby, all we do is win, so show me my opponent. Adversity, doubt, stress, could care less, cause how we handle those like an S on our chest. Super proud of how we held it.